Time for race trackers. Last week's racing was rather lackluster, and this week looks like it will be more of the same, as we're in the doldrums of February racing. However, our guest jockey Dylan Davis continues to have an outstanding meeting at Aqueduct with some record-breaking days. I'm Bill Gottemer with my co-host Mike Monroe and Bob Santamaze. As you know, each week we try to capture what has transpired in the racing world and bring you new information to our listeners. Please spread the word about how much fun we have here each Thursday night. Hello, Bob.
Bill, how are you? Good to be with you again.
Thank you. Mike's going to join us a little bit later. He's busy making a living, but he'll join us when he can. Bob, as I said, last week's racing was somewhat lackluster, I think, between the weather and a bunch of horses being scratched who were trying to travel from New York down to Laurel. You know, all in all, I didn't really see anything that caught my eye last week.
Yeah. Between the shipping ban out of Belmont down to Laurel and then the snow they had down there, it seemed to really take the starch out of those two big sprint races that they had. I think perhaps some of the New York horses really would have done well had they made it down to Laurel for either the Barbara Fritchie or the General George. So clearly a little of the air came out of that balloon. I thought there was some excitement, certainly down at Fairgrounds, and then on Monday at Oaklawn, we saw a couple of more three-year-old races, some promising efforts, some question marks, but there was some things to sink your teeth into there. But now, Bill, listen, it's all systems go going forward from here. We're heading into March. Gulfstream will heat up. Before you know it, Keeneland will be opening up, and we'll be headlong into spring.
No, it will come fast and furious. There's no question about it. The races that we had this week, last week, I think it's still too early. I think we probably haven't seen the Derby winner yet, although that's just my guess. I mean, there's some years where these early prep races, there's a standout who you really want to keep your eye on. So far, I haven't seen that. But you're right. Once it starts, it's going to start in a big way. I guess the Gotham will be in New York. And I guess there's two things I've seen and heard about the Gotham. And one is that we've been told that our buddy Dylan Davis will have the mount in the Gotham on Kathanka for Jerry Hollendorfer, who will be shipping in.
Yep.
To New York, and Dylan Davis has gotten that mount, and that's good news. And then I guess we'll see that it looks like Kieran McLaughlin's going to take Enticed and bring Enticed to New York and take Mr. Avery, or Avery Island, rather, Avery Island, and go to Louisiana Derby. So a week ago, Avery Island looked very impressive in New York. Enticed looked not so impressive down in Gulfstream. But this kind of indicates to me that Kieran McLaughlin may think Enticed is the better of the two.
Now, Bill, is there any word of Strike Power is going to end up in the Gotham?
I haven't seen anything written about him at all.
Right.
If our listeners will recall, that's the Mark Hennings horse who has two for two now and was impressive, winning a 7-furlong sprint, 6-furlong race, and then a 7-furlong race down in Gulfstream. I guess when he did finish up, he finished up on the wrong lead and kind of tired. We'll have to see whether that took too much out of him to continue on the trail. But that certainly would be interesting. I guess the other horse, and you and I didn't speak about this, so if you're not familiar with it, I haven't seen the race, but everybody's been talking about the race that Bob Baffert had with a first-time starter named Justify.
Yeah.
And,
in a 103, I think.
Yeah, I mean, just a tremendous debut. He's a Scat Daddy, which is a sire who's had tremendous success internationally, not so much in the U.S. And I guess if a first-time starter who wanted to sprint this late in his career, you know, meaning his three-year-old career, if it wasn't trained by Bob Baffert, most people would think it's too late to get involved in the Triple Crown Trail. But as we know, Bob Baffert, you know, has a way of you know, of having these horses ready first time in May, no matter where they come from. So
correct.
I guess that's something interesting. Did you see that race? I did not.
No, I did not see it. I just read about it, and you know, there was an article in the Racing Form for Saturday that the morning of his maiden race that Baffert was just super high on the horse. So, you know, when he's super high on what's coming out of his barn, where everything is excellent,
you know,
the horse might be special. You know, it's interesting, Bill. You know, two things. I kind of made a mental note out of the Oaklawn race on Monday. Another California horse, you know, steps up and wins at a pretty good price for the DeSormo team. It just kind of leads you to think how deep the California three-year-old bench is right now. And the other kind of thing that caught my eye that race, I thought Lucas ran very well. Sporting Chance for first time since August, I thought ran a very credible race. And, you know, he's sitting with an okay hand between that horse and the winner of the Risen Star, Brazzano, you know, heading into the spring.
It is pretty funny. Well, you know, as soon as the more things change, the more they stay the same, right? I mean, you know, Wayne Lucas is, of course, for our listeners who don't remember, or may not remember, who'd be young, dominated the Triple Crown races in the 80s, and had kind of receded a little bit, and you know would pop up and win something every once in a while, and you know always was a danger in big races, but his days of having a huge stable seemed to be over, and meanwhile he's had a resurgence in the last 2 years, and you're right, he's right
yes.
back on the Triple Crown trail. It's a game of second and third acts, right?
Yeah. Yep. And I'll say this for him, I've bumped into him with a couple of my friends down at Gulfstream, and certainly at Saratoga. And whether he was at the top of the mountain or, you know, having a bit of a tough time, to me, you wouldn't find a nicer man on the racetrack. You know, in terms of the fans and say hello and communicate with the average schmo like myself who's betting a couple of dollars on a race. You know, this guy was the height of the game, as you say, at one point.
Well, I mean, not only that, when Wayne Lucas came about, for our younger listeners who don't know, it was a paradigm shift as far as availability went for trainers. You know, trainers prior to Wayne Lucas spoke to everyone like they were speaking to the FBI. You know, they gave no details, no color, no, you know, as few words as possible, you know, kept as low a profile as possible, and really kind of, you know, gave the impression that they were either curmudgeons or worse yet, hiding something. And Wayne Lucas came on, and, you know, a combination of his style and his looks and his height, and I guess being from California, and he spoke to everyone, and he spoke to, you know, and you know like anybody else who says a lot of words, some of the things he said were controversial, but he spoke to people, and he spoke to reporters, and I guess Wayne Lucas always used the basketball analogies because he was a basketball coach at one point, and he talked about his athletes and his squad and his team, and it really kind of rejuvenated a lot of interest in the game when he came along.
Oh, and if you remember back in the 80s, Bill, both positively and negatively for a while, in terms of some of his strategies and training methods. But, you know how they talk in the NFL like a coaching tree, you know, like Bill Parcells is a coaching tree and Belichick, et cetera. Look at his training tree. I mean, it speaks for itself, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Todd Pletcher, Kieran McLaughlin.
Kieran, Mark Hennig, you know, the names just roll off your tongue. I mean, he's he's led more, you know, lent more to the game than most. So good to see him back in the spotlight, you know, with a couple of good 3-year olds as we head into the spring.
Right. I mean,
Bill,
I guess for again for all listeners, sorry.
Please.
Well, just again for all listeners, he changed the way you trained a horse when you shipped out of town. You know, it was conventional wisdom that you had to have a horse in town for a while, have a work or two off to, over the track. And he did the exact opposite. They used to call it D-Wayne off the plane. You know, he would fly his horses in the day before, run, take the money and go home and be gone before anybody really knew he was there. And it was a whole different style of training from out of town. And he was the first one who kind of invaded all different areas with horses from his California base. And again, it changed the game.
Yes. He overcame the, overcame some financial issues at one time, overcame the very serious injury to his son on the backstretch, which would have sent anyone back. His son was clearly a very important foundation to his barn and was never the same after that tragic accident with Tabasco Cat, I believe it was.
That's right.
And made it through and he's had a Hall of Fame career many times over.
No, absolutely. It'll be fun to see him on the trail. I thought, and I know there's a point you wanted to make, so I don't want to take away from it. But
no,
there's one point.
You were going to highlight the Hall of Fame names before, and I was looking at all of them earlier, and it's funny. The racing form, I think Jay Hovde had an article on the Hall of Fame nominees. And he used the phrase "hit the all button." I think he's right.
Correct.
I don't know how you select. I don't know how you select among this group. It's just one super horse and super individual after the other. I don't know how you distinguish between any of them.
Right. Well, what Bob's referring to for our listeners is this week they came out with the nominees for this year's Hall of Fame, and the nominees come out now and. I'm not exactly sure when the vote takes place. I should know. I don't. But the induction comes in August up in Saratoga, and it's three categories like usual. It's jockeys, trainers, and horses, and it's a group of 10, and we'll go over each one of them individually. But I think it's limited to 4 entrants each year, and I don't know why that's the rule, but that is the rule. And as you say, this is a bunch where it certainly seems that everybody here is worthy of entrance, and I guess the one that's the jockey colony will the jockey nominees are Corey Nakatani, of course, who's Mike's friend, and when Mike comes on, we'll speak to him about that. Bobby Alborado and Craig Perrett. Craig Perrett is the one who has gotten overlooked the last few years, and I think it's largely because of this rule that only four people horses can get in at any one year. And I don't think there's anybody who doesn't think he's worthy. I think that just the way it falls out, there's other nominees each year which kind of step over him.
Yeah, when Monmouth Bill was a little bit more meaningful in the summer than it might be in today's environment, he would dominate down there. He was tremendous in that Florida, the Jersey circuit, in the late 70s into the 80s into the 90s. And he was very much a top rider. And would ride in New York frequently as well. But I really remember him. He was kind of like Joe Bravo before Joe Bravo was the king of Monmouth. But how do you distinguish him versus Robbie Alborado or Corey Nakatani? All three are worthy nominees, you know?
No, I agree. I mean, Craig Perrett, you know, one of the dangers in the Baseball Hall of Fame has this too, is as time goes on, memory fades, and there's fewer people who remember, you know, how great you were. Craig Perrett, for our listeners, he rode for Warren Kroll. He rode a horse called Bet Twice, among many others.
Yes.
Later on in his career, he was the earlier version of what Mike Smith is doing now. You know, as he got older, you know, he didn't ride nine a day. He rode maybe three a day. But if there was a big stakes race to be had anywhere in the country, Craig Perrett was there, and he was a big money rider. I mean, he was a money rider, you know, before Jerry Bailey was, and before Mike Smith was. But you kind of knew they meant business when he was on board. And you know, so I certainly hope he finds to get his way in. No knock on Corey Nakatani, you know, or Bobby Alvarado, both of whom are still active. So you know, maybe we hope for Craig Perrett in there, and we'll speak to Mike when he comes on. On the trainers thing, Mark Cassie is no stranger to anybody, I don't think. You know, he's been a guest on our show. John Sheriffs is still an active trainer. I will speak of both of them. They're both obviously worthy. David Whiteley is the name that some of our listeners may not remember. And David Whiteley actually left the game. I believe he passed away a few years ago, but he left the game and kind of went into obscurity. But he managed a very small stable, first as an assistant to his father, Frank Whiteley, who was the trainer of Ruffian.
Yep.
And then on his own, and I think I'll have to look up the statistics, but you know, at a Belmont meet, they would run 20 horses and they'd win with 16 of them, you know, or 14 of them.
The Whiteley name, father and son, was very prominent in New York. And very successful, as you say. But again, how do you distinguish him versus John Sheriffs, who may have trained the greatest filly or mare to ever run on a racetrack, or Mark Cassie, who today is, you know, you could argue he's the top. You put him with Hollendorfer or Todd Pletcher as perhaps the most dominant trainer in the game today.
You know, again, I think it's just a question of when, not if, with those guys.
Yeah.
I hope enough people remember David Whiteley, because as I said, he and his father were the opposite of Wayne Lucas. I guess, you know, Wayne Lucas, personality wise, was Mr. Sunshine and always available. You know, David Whiteley and Frank Whiteley, when they were at the top of their game, you couldn't get a word out of them, and when they left the game, I think they just left it. They just totally left it, and I think I read an article somewhere where David Whiteley said, like, you know, if you're not right in the middle of it, why do any of it, you know, which is for fans is kind of hard to believe that you could walk away from that. So they
right,
that was kind of their personality, and that probably hasn't helped them over the years as far as getting into the Hall of Fame. On the horses, we have a male horse, Gio Ponti. I'll be candid. I was never a fan of Gio Ponti, although when you look at it on paper, he did everything. He won on grass, he won on dirt, he sprinted, he won at a distance, he's turned out to be a pretty good sire. I don't know why I was never enamored of him. I just wasn't, and I can't put my finger on it, but I kind of always thought he was, maybe because in my mind I never pegged him as one thing.
Yeah.
And the versatility I guess, maybe confused me more than anything.
Bill, didn't he run second in the Breeders' Cup Classic when it was in Santa Anita?
Yes, he did. And that was on dirt, and that surprised everybody, I think, right?
Well, I don't know. Was it on dirt or was it on the synth?
On the poly? That's probably
right.
Been so he probably won on dirt, grass, and poly.
Yeah.
that's right. I've got
a memory of Gio Ponti. Boy, I don't know how many years ago when he was running. It was Belmont Day. He was an even money favorite in, I guess, the grass stake that they was the Manhattan, the Grade One Manhattan. I'm sitting on a very, very big pick three where the middle leg of that pick three was, and I forget the name of the horse now, but it was trained by Eric Guillot in the Acorn, and she won, and she paid like $80.
Okay.
And I'm rolling into a really good pick three with Gio Ponti, who's a stone cold favorite Manhattan, and gets beat at the wire, by two noses that I will never, ever forget it. I mean, my friends were already counting the money for me. It was, you know, I'm buying dinner for everybody. And so I've got a little bit of a negative slant just for that reason with Gio Ponti. But take nothing away from an ultra accomplished racehorse. It's just that I'll always have that memory of him getting caught as an odds-on favorite Belmont Day in the Manhattan and costing me a couple of dollars.
Well, I have a similar feeling about him, and it just goes to show a little bit sometimes where brilliance in a racehorse is more than what you see on paper, because when you see it on paper, you can't argue. He checks all the boxes, but to me, he just you know, he was a fine horse, but I just never was that enamored of him. I want to go back to the riders for a second. One of our listeners and a real astute handicapper, Bob Gusty, you know, points out to me by text message that, you know, Pratt was really strong and you couldn't go against him if he wanted the lead. You know, if he wanted the lead and you tried to go with him, you paid for it, and he would, you know, for that reason, you know, he had his own way on the front a lot of times because you just knew he was unwilling to compromise, and that helped a lot of his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one of our listeners remembering him. On the Phillies, all the Phillies are good. Heavenly Prize, I think, is the best of them. Heavenly Prize.
I would agree with you.
Ogden Phipps and Shug McGahee, and just that's it. I'm kind of surprised that she's not in already, to be honest with you. That to me is a shoo-in. Havre de Grace, I guess. The place at the, I guess there was always dispute over how you pronounce that. Havre de Grace is the place, but apparently Havre de Grace is the name of the horse because it was named after somebody who actually his name was Grace. So it was a bit of a play on words. A really nice horse, beat Colts, ran against Colts all the time, certainly deserving. And Blind Luck, a horse from California who came to New York. I didn't get an opportunity to see her much. I did see what I remember of Blind Luck, and Bob, I don't know if you do, was just how determined she was. She would get past and she'd come back. She'd look like she was beaten and she'd fight on. So again, all, you know, all
Bill,
worthy.
Was Blind Luck a Jerry Hollendorfer filly?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And she won a race at Saratoga again when she, and we're doing this from memory, so please, if anybody who's listening, if we make any mistakes, two things, you know, let us know, but second of all, forgive us, because these literally came out today, and we didn't have the time to look over, you know, all the to look over all the past performances, which are probably readily available. We just didn't have the time to do it. But Blind Luck battled back. I don't know if it was in the test, but it was in one of the filly races up in Saratoga, and again, you know, I think Jerry Hollendorfer was quoted as saying one of the hardest trying fillies he ever had.
Yeah, very hard to pick among the three. If I had to rate them, I would agree with you. I would probably give a slight edge to Heavenly Prize, and that might be our New York bias a little bit coming through there, but all three are very worthy.
Yeah, I mean, it's because, and again, I guess at some point they'll have to look at whether or not, you know, whether or not there should be years when you can induct everyone who's nominated. I was at the Racing Hall of Fame, as I told you last week, only 2 weeks ago, and, you know, for a memorial service for a friend of ours, and it's an interesting place. I mean, the Racing Hall of Fame and Museum, the museum part is more historical and probably less recognizable to a lot of people and to horse players. A lot of the information in there is already known. But the actual Hall of Fame itself with the plaques for all the inductees is just a pretty awesome place. And, you know, people like you or I, Bob or Mike, could get lost in there for hours and not really come
right
up the air, you know.
Yep.
And, you know, it's always kind of you know, touching up in Saratoga where they go to the ceremony, and someday I'm
yes.
going to make it to one of those ceremonies. I've never
yes.
gone. Have you ever gone to one of the ceremonies?
No. You, Bill, given where its location is, usually when I'm on that road, I'm on the other side of the road, not that side of Union
yeah.
Avenue.
Yeah, well, they do it early in the morning because the riders need to get over there. And I guess last year I almost went when Javier Castellano got inducted, but I guess for some reason I wasn't there. We're excited about our guest. We're going to have our guest in 3 or 4 minutes. It's going to be Ren Hakeem Carruthers, who some of you may or may not know. She's the wife of Matt Carruthers, who's a TVG analyst, but she's a tremendous pedigree expert in her own right, and she comes from a tremendous horse racing background, and we look forward to having a conversation with her. I looked at this week's card, Bob, and I can't come up with anything. The only thing that came up on Saturday's card at Aqueduct, the seventh race, there's a first-time starter named Frau Blucher, and I know nothing about the horse, but people our age will remember that Frau Blucher, I think, was one of the stars of the movie Young Frankenstein, which was... I think back in the day before there were multiple theaters, I think Young Frankenstein played for like, I don't know, 30 or 40 straight weeks up at our local theater. And, you know, we all saw it a number of times. And Frau Blucher, I think, was a character played by Cloris Leachman. And every time someone said her name, all the horses whinnied and scattered and neighed. So there was always something scary about her, and I guess somebody's got a sense of humor there that they name it. I should look and see whether there's any. Or I will look and see whether there's any name thing to it that would drive that there. I looked through the whole card, and I don't really see anything that interests me in New York. And I rarely say that, but betting the card on Saturday, it's just a bet.
I did not even look at New York for Saturday. I looked briefly at Tampa because our good friend Phil Gleaves has a horse in that day. I wanted to see how he shapes up in a turf sprint down at Tampa. But I did look at Gulfstream, and listen, I thought the House Hope came up as a pretty decent race and pretty evenly matched, and it might be a pretty good betting race.
It is, and we should talk about that. It's the return of Irish War Cry, and I guess Todd Pletcher has a couple horses in there, which is a good race for some of the older horses starting. I did notice something at one angle that's hard to go against, and I guess. Maybe in some ways it seems like it's cheating because I know nothing about the horse, but there are trainers who just win off the claim. And in the third race on Saturday at Gulfstream, there's a horse called Plain Air, and it was claimed last time by a trainer, Angel Rodriguez. And his record off the claim is like 36 or 37%. So I would think Plain Air, spelled P-L-E-I-N instead of Plain. We'll probably improve if for no other reason that all the horses that Angel Rodriguez claims seem to improve first time out, and maybe you don't know why, but they do. and then the 10th race, Mike Monroe reminded me that King Zachary in the 10th race at Gulfstream on Saturday. It was a horse that Dale Romans was very high on when he was on the show. He spoke to us before he made his first start, and his first start was actually pretty good. And you know, something must have gone wrong because he went to the sidelines for a while. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if King Zachary became a nice horse, and maybe his 3-year-old year gets started on Saturday.
He's beautifully bred. He costs $550,000. He's working fine. Maybe the only knock is the post, but yeah, he's got every right to step forward. And his first race, he ran into the colt that was the second choice in the Risen Star. So he's got ability for sure. But again, Bill, it's one of those Gulfstream maiden races, maiden special weight races, full of possibilities. And you can make a case, if you want, for 3 or 4 in this race very easily. But clearly King Zachary is someone to consider in that 10th race.
Right. If you watch that race, he ran in spots. He ran well in spots. I think that the comment is 5 path on the turn and flattened, and that's true. It seems like he didn't get away from the gate the best he could, and he kind of made a nice little run, and then he had enough. So I wouldn't be surprised if between November and now he's kind of grew into himself. And, I, for one, will be taking a look at that. And, again, Bobby Alvarado, who we just spoke about, retains the mount. Let's talk a little bit before Ren joins us Let's talk a little bit about the Howell's Hope, which is a race that you brought up, and it's kind of one of the first 4-year-old races that's not for mega bucks, but it begins the 4-year-old handicap season on the East Coast.
One turn mile at Gulfstream. It brings back the return of the Belmont favorite, and who ran second, Irish War Cry, Graham Motion. Jose Ortiz now getting them out for, I guess, Rajiv would have this horse most of the time last year, but now it's Jose Ortiz picking up the mount. Economic Model, who's very much a solid miler coming out of the Chad Brown barn. Conquest Big E, who's very sharp right now, coming off a very good effort in the Fred Hooper. And then it also was the return of Malagasy out of the Todd Pletcher barn, who had 2 wins at Gulfstream last year, won the Rebel, was 5th, only beaten 2 lengths to Classic Empire in the Arkansas Derby, went on the bench for 7 or 8 months, and then returned to run 2nd in a sprint at Gulfstream. So Malagasy is one that was very promising last year and is returning to the races. You also need to include Giuseppe the Great, who's run very well at times for Nick Zito. And Send It In, also from the Todd Pletcher barn, John Velasquez up, away since April of last year, when Send It In ran a 119 buyer in the mile and a quarter Excelsior. So a lot of interesting possibilities in this one. It's a pretty good race, good betting race.
Yeah, there's clearly a story with Send It In, and I don't know it. We'll probably have to find it out. Let's pick that up again in a little bit. I'm delighted to say Ren Carruthers has joined us. So,
hey.
Good evening. Hi, welcome to Racetrackers.
Thank you for having me. How are you guys doing tonight?
Well, Red, we're trying to find some interest this week. We were saying last week was a little bit of a dull week in racing, and we're scouring the cards for this weekend. But we focused a little bit on the Hall of Fame nominees that came out this
week.
Yeah,
I heard the discussion, and I've got some good news for you.
Okay.
So the Hall of Fame, they changed their rule. The former rule where they capped the number of inductees at 4 is no longer in place. Now voters may select as many candidates as they believe are worthy of induction to the Hall of Fame. And all candidates that receive a majority approval, that's 50.1% or higher of the voting panel, will be elected to the Hall of Fame.
Wow, that's tremendous news. Now, were we just wrong on that, or is that a recent change?
I don't know when exactly they changed this, but it is definitely a change. So don't feel too bad.
Okay. That's the danger of doing things from memory. Well, that's good news, because we said this is a stellar class, and you heard our conversation about it, and we won't go back over it. Welcome so much to the show. You and I have met. You haven't met my co-host Bob Santamaze and Mike Monroe.
Hey,
will join us later.
How are you, Ren?
Doing well, thanks.
And I gave you a little bit of an introduction, and people who follow TVG, you don't need any introduction, and most racing fans, but you've been involved in racing pretty much all your life, and I know you're a bit of a pedigree analyst, specialist.
Yes.
And tell us a little bit about how you got your start and what drove you to this game.
Well, I grew up in Michigan, and I don't know if you guys remember the old Detroit race course. My parents used to breed and raise and race racehorses, and we'd go to good old DRC. We actually were kind of a big fish in a small pond up there. We raised 2 regional champions. And when you grow up on a horse farm, especially a breeding farm, it's kind of hard to not fall in love with the pedigrees that are out in your field. You know what I'm saying? We had sons of Secretariat. We had a son of Massey and Bold. We had a son of, Silent Screen. It's been so long. But we just had so many horses. Oh, Round Table. We had a son of Round Table, who I still to this day think is very largely underrated. You don't really hear him that often in talks of the greats, and he should be in that conversation. But, you know, it was just a lot of fun, and just tracing the limbs of those family trees was especially interesting to me. And also growing up on the farm, you learn a lot about conformation and temperament. And all of that comes in very handy when you're at the racetrack, of course, and you're looking at horses in the paddock and when they're post-parade and seeing how they're handling the situation, the range of motion, and just different cues. So that's all offered me a perspective. When my parents eventually got out of it, I couldn't help but get back in. So I started, I got a broodmare and I bred her myself, and I have a few horses right now. I have a son of Shackleford who is 2 years old, and then I have a 3-year-old bullet train filly who's getting ready to go, and she's with Ray Handel at Tampa.
Well, the Shackleford obviously is a sire. Is a famous sire now.
Yeah.
Stamps his get. Does your Shackleford have the big white blaze on his face that most of them have?
No, but he does have the stripe. He has a stripe, and it's actually the most white that the mare's produced. So
okay.
he really took after the forestry look in terms of, you know, the coloring, but also I would say in terms of his build. Now remember, Shackleford is out of Oatsy, and Oatsy is by Unbridled. And my colt really favors, in terms of being lanky and tall, Unbridled. So
okay.
It's kind of cool to see reflections of famous racehorses in your progeny. Now, whether or not that horse can run like Unbridled is a different story, but, well, we can hope.
Well, you know, we bring this up on the show a lot of times, and many times, rather, and the game over the years that Bob and I have been following it, people have attempted to make it more science than art, you know, handicapping, and it's become a numbers game, and
yeah.
I guess you can't argue with success, that the numbers people have great success with it, and you know, I won't knock anybody else's handicapping method, but it's good to remember that they are living beings and animals, and a trained eye observation such as yours can really tell you many things, and it's some of them positive, but probably more importantly negative, right? When you see a horse that just doesn't look
right.
Like he's in the right spot.
Oh yeah, for sure, and especially like there are certain things I look for. You know, a lot of people, they get upset when a horse is you know what they deem washing out, but the only time I get really concerned with that is if, you know, obviously if it's not a hot day, and if it's what's called lathering sweat. And that's where the protein buildup has basically whipped up to what looks like whipped cream on the horse. Then I have a problem with it. If it's a sweat on the neck, that just tells me the horse is expending the heat that's in its body naturally, and that's good. He's cooling himself down. So that doesn't worry me, you know, so much. Other things I kind of look for to get a little bit of an edge, if it's a rainy day and the horses are coming out the track, and, you know, obviously this is, you know, if the horse doesn't already have this in their past performances, you know, this is where this works. If you already know what the horse does on a certain surface, then obviously go with what the paper is telling you. But, you know, when you see a horse step out on track and he looks completely fine and confident walking over a muddy surface, there are some horses you can tell they act real delicate suddenly and they pick up their hooves. They look very uncomfortable. And that's a telltale sign to stay away from them, even if I like them on paper beforehand. But yeah, I mean, there's just a number of ways to use your eye, it's especially good, obviously, when you don't have a lot of information to go on based on the form. So that's why it works really well with young horses in particular.
You know, Bill,
right now,
it's interesting. What Ren is saying, the more and more now, the larger tracks are adding that element of a Maggie Wolfendale in this saddling paddock, Caton Bradar, Gabby, the whole TVG team that's on site, to give you that added element that Ren was just saying, where, you know, you and I are not schooled to know what to look for physically in a horse as it's approaching the racetrack. Now that information is available to the player via this added feature that many of the larger tracks are providing, where they have an on-site expert to say, this one's looking good, this one's not, you know, a little washed out, and it just gives you that added edge. And listen, to me, more information is better information if you want to be a serious player.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. For sure. Well, Ren, Bob is one of the most astute handicappers we know, and he looks for things that other people don't see, and Bob came up with a beautiful horse 2 weeks ago. I can't recall the name right now, but you know, Bob was impressed by the colt selling for excuse me at the sale for I think 30 times the sire's fee.
That's the type of
analysis I know you do when I see you put together, you know, your pedigree analysis.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing, and you know, I discovered this a couple of years ago. I shouldn't say a couple of years ago. I've known about it, but I really started getting, you know, sort of like, why is nobody saying this? In terms of how I handicap, you know, pedigree wise, not only like you were saying, do you take into account, you know, when a horse has gone through the sale, but you know, the form, you'll see in the form, and let me give a shout out to the form. I mean, they do great work and all, but that being said, you know, when you first example, Saratoga comes out and you're seeing the little pedigree note underneath the horse, and it, you know, sire is X percent with first time starters, mare won $50,000 at the track, half to a, you know, a winner, you know, just it's very generalized. And I was like, gosh, why are they stopping there? Because I'll tell you right now, those of us in the breeding industry who go to these sales, we're not stopping there. We're looking at the dam's family. We're going, is the dam a half to anybody? Is the second dam, a.k.a. the grandmother, is she anybody of note? What has this female family produced? And for so long, you know, players have, in my opinion, no offense to anybody who, you know, subscribes to this, but been misguided by the idea of dosage figures and other figures that relate based on the stallion. And what we've seen time and again, you will have sires that improve their mares, but by and large, the mare's family is so important, and it was being completely ignored for all this time. And so I was getting an edge on, you know, on my wagers, because I was looking beyond what you were seeing in the form and actually going back and checking out. And, you know, for example, Instilled Regard, and this will come back to the talk about the Hall of Fame. I'm not saying that he's a horse that I'm on for the Derby, but I just think it's interesting to know. I mean, okay, he's by Arch. She's out of Enhancing, who's by Forestry. But did you also know that his mother is a half-sister to Good Reward? Did you know that that also makes her half-sister to Pure Prize? And did you also know that his second dam, and again, that's the grandmother, did you know his grandmother is Heavenly Prize? So
Who's the Hall of Fame inductee we spoke about just earlier?
Yes, he was your Hall of Fame inductee. So just bringing it back into the conversation. So this is the type of information that is really valuable to have, because sometimes when you look on the face of it, you're like, oh, the dam here, she didn't win anything, and she hasn't produced anything, you know.
But, right.
And this is the other thing. I think people are much too keen to throw a mare out after a couple of foals not doing anything. You have to remember that every new pairing is a new opportunity for genes to come together in this really cool puzzle-like way. So, you know, I always give a mare another shot.
I know you know this, Ren, and Bob knows it, but, you know, sometimes we get people who listen to the show who say sometimes they explain things a little bit, and they use these terms that are kicked around, and unless somebody tells you, you don't know what they are.
Right.
The term overbreeding is bringing a mare who may not have the background that you're speaking about to a sire who's too expensive, and it doesn't really work. You can't
out-kicking
make up
your coverage.
You outkick your coverage. That's right. You know, you can't make up for the lack of female genetics with a hot sire. Similarly, there's a term, and people have asked me, and I should know where this comes from, but I don't. You know, that there's a term, blue hen mare, and a blue hen mare is right. It is, but I don't know where it generates from. I should.
Yeah, I'm not sure. who actually originated the term, but I mean, obviously the most famous blue hen mare is La Troyenne, and she was no type of racehorse herself, but boy, I mean, that dynasty that she, you know, stems from her is to this day, I mean, potent. And I mean, and that's the thing you look for, you know, you look for mares that are consistently throwing good horses. And that's probably why, for example, a horse like Shackelford is doing so well at stud. He's out of Oatsy, and Oatsy produced not only him, but Lady Joanne and Bagdaria. And, you know, she's a consistently good brood mare.
Right. And I guess the bigger stables over the years would have consistently keep their fillies and mares and, you know, and breed them, and just had a tremendous band. You know, Darby Dan comes to mind, Christiana Farm over the years, certainly the Phipps. I guess now Mandy Pope has probably assembled among the greatest group of brood mares ever seen on, well, certainly seen in modern times, right?
I know, right? Well, she got, she picked up Songbird, right? And she's going to breed to Arrogate.
Right. So I mean, every mare that there is seems to wind up on her farm, and I'd love to, you know, you look at the economics and you wonder whether it can work. But that being said, it's just a beautiful collection of horse genetics that is all in one place.
For sure.
We'd be remiss if we didn't speak about other aspects of your life. You're married to Matt Carruthers, who many of us see on a daily basis. I guess you see him in real life. You see him on TV. And do you ever get sick of hearing his voice?
Believe it or not, no. The only time is when he's just being goofy. But no, actually, it's pretty funny. Like, Matt, as big a personality as he is, it sounds really saccharine, I know. I don't get tired of it. I love him so much. He's one of the most genuine, he did not pay me anything. He's one of the most genuine human beings. And, you know, it was kind of hard for me before, you know, seeing on social media every now and then, you know, people throwing a comment at him like he's arrogant or something. If he hits something, hits a wager or whatnot, I almost want to throttle people like that, because I want to say, are you kidding me? He's one of the most humble guys there is. But when it comes to betting, you better believe you got to go out there with confidence, or what are you doing it for, right?
If you don't enjoy your wins, there's no point in doing it. That's for sure, right?
Exactly. No, exactly. And you know, and he rarely ever even brings up when he hits something. I have to sometimes, you know, give him the props. But you know, I think part of it is he's just got that big personality, and it's one of those personalities you either really appreciate it or you think it's arrogance. And I can tell you, you know, somebody who's in, you know, with him day in, day out, again, he's just one of the most genuine people. He truly, truly loves this sport, and he puts
that's
immense work. You see him do on air. Once he's done with his shift, he gets off air, he comes home, he changes briefly, and then he's working on the next day's cards for hours. And he's, you know, doing, you know, he's on Formulator, he's watching replays. This is a man who genuinely, again, is putting in the work, because he does not want to mislead the horse players that are looking to him for advice. And I respect that.
I think we all appreciate it. I only bring that up jokingly, because Bob's wife and my wife, I can't speak for Bob's wife. My wife doesn't listen to the show, and she says, "Well, I hear you talk about horses enough in person. I don't need to." So I think it's mostly a nervousness. She doesn't want to. She'd be nervous listening to us on air.
That's the fun thing with us. Oh no! Like I think that's the fun part of, you know, about the fact that we both come from this background. We speak each other's language in that regard, and you know, we'll play tickets together. I mean, we played that Gulfstream Park Pick Six ticket, and like most everybody, we were alive going into that last race, and then the horse missed the break, and we were just like crestfallen. Right? I mean, not that it was paying anything, but just, you know, it's nice to be right. And not only does the horse miss the break, but he's clearly the best horse in the race, so that made it even better. But no, we've been able to travel together, you know, been to Dubai together, everywhere, and it's just so much fun.
Oh, wonderful. Bob, I'm dominating the conversation. I don't mean to do that. So, Bob, I know there's a few questions you might have. I will follow up, Bob. Before that, though, Ren, I guess I've noticed that you have started including the Arabic letter N in your Twitter handle and at the times in your name, and it's in honor of your family background. And do you want to speak a little bit about that for the listeners?
Oh, well, thank you for the opportunity to do so. Yeah, absolutely. So my dad is from Iraq, and he is more specifically from the area that you've heard on the news many times by this point. They say it on the news incorrectly. They say Mosul. It's Mosul. And that is basically where the Iraqi Christians are from. That used to be historically in ancient times, ancient Assyria. And so our people are the indigenous people of Iraq, what used to be Mesopotamia, et cetera, et cetera. In any case, when these terrorists took over, they were marking the doors of the homes and businesses of the Christians with this letter, the N, which is for Nazarene, you know, as Jesus of Nazareth. And, you know, obviously many of these people were either killed, driven into diaspora. And it's just a way I felt of symbolizing two things. One, I mean, we don't hear a lot about it on the news anymore. And so it's just a way of, hey, don't forget, this is still happening. Even though right now we look like we're in a good position of having driven those terrorists out. But you know, and also just saying, hey, I'm one of these people and I'm proud of it. And I'm proud of my dad's heritage. I'm proud that I come from a culture that goes thousands and thousands of years back. And
the breadbasket of civilization, right? I mean, that's literally what it was called, right?
I mean, the cradle of civilization, they say, is between the Tigris and the Euphrates. If you were a little bit north of that. But, I mean, our culture, I mean, you hear about Jonah. Jonah was up there preaching. And that was one of the tomb of Jonah, unfortunately, is one of the sites that these terrorists destroyed. But, you know, it's just such a wonderful culture. I'm so proud to be part of it. And I just like putting that out there because also I think there's a misconception about, for example, even in Iraq, our people are not Arab. You know, we're Chaldeans. And again, that we relate back to the ancient Assyrians. Everybody thinks that everybody from the Middle Eastern culture is Arab, and that's not true. So, you know, it's just another way of helping to educate, I suppose. And so that's why I did it.
And honor to your father as well, which is great.
Yeah.
You know, I guess the other thing we want to, and I know Bob, please jump in here with any horse racing questions or the like that you'd like to get in.
Well, Bill, I did want to just quickly ask Ren two quick points. When I was preparing for the show, Ren, I saw a lovely photo of you with one of my favorite horses of recent time, Private Zone. And who I was fortunate enough to cash a number of bets on. He was just ultra consistent, taken at Saratoga, I think it was. And I wanted to ask, and this is coming from someone who has summered at Saratoga now for over 35 years, but has never been to Del Mar. How would you compare the two venues and the two tracks and the two racing environments?
Okay, well, I'm an unabashed lover of Saratoga. Saratoga, I grew up going to Keeneland, and I felt guilty because the first time I went to Saratoga, I was like, oh my gosh, where's this track been all my life? And I still love Keeneland. Keeneland's amazing, don't get me wrong. But Saratoga to me, you know, was just so moving in terms of, you know, not just the aesthetics, the history, the people that were there. I mean, these are people that are reading the form on a Tuesday, you know.
Right.
And And I just absolutely fell in love with it. It's so idyllic and serene. And, you know, you go to the backside and it just feels real nice and laid back. Now, Del Mar, don't get me wrong. It's beautiful. It's glamorous. The architecture is, you know, it's just, again, it's very glamorous. I find that it's fun. It's more fashion driven, more than so much from the days I've been there, you know, than the handicapping side of it so much. I really feel there's a distinction in terms of the crowd, essentially. Whereas, again, the crowd there is there more to have a good time for the most part. And the crowd at Saratoga is there to make some money. if that puts it into, you know, into sharper focus. And both tracks are wonderful. The management in both tracks are fantastic. But to me, nothing beats Saratoga.
Well, I guess that was always the distinction in the Triple Crown races. You know, when we were growing up, Churchill Downs, the Kentucky Derby, and the Preakness was all about the party and celebration of spring.
Yeah.
And Belmont Day was all about the racing. You know, and that's changed. That's changed over the last 10 years or so. But right, Bob, when we would go to the Belmont Days, when Woody Stevens was winning everything.
Yeah.
It was a handicapping day. It was, you know, there was, if you brought somebody along who was there to party, you know, they'd be tolerated, but they wouldn't really be embraced. Whereas
correct.
The other two tracks was exactly the opposite. You know, I remember, I guess one of the first Preaknesses I went to try to engage somebody in a discussion about horses, and they looked at me like I had two heads. You know, but
yeah.
The other thing I just wanted to ask you quickly, am I correct that you and Matt have an addition coming to your family soon? And I just want to see how you were feeling.
You are. You are correct. We just found out a couple of weeks ago the gender. We were having a little girl. And
good for you.
Thank you so much. And if you guys want a name, because we already have the name picked out.
Oh, wonderful.
All right. So our daughter's name is going to be Ava, and then her middle name, because I do want to tie her back to my culture. Growing up, my cousin was more like a sister to me, so her middle name is going to be after her, and that name is Sahar. And then obviously last name's Carruthers. So we're very excited. She's due June 30th, which that gets in the way of Saratoga, but if you needed a good reason to miss it, I think having a baby is one.
For sure.
But, no,
that's
we're
great.
Very excited.
Good for you.
Thank you.
I've told this story on air before, but it's worth telling it again. My daughter, who's now 23, when she was under the age of two, she had a problem with her eye, and they wanted to test her sight. And they can't really use letters because children that age get letters backwards, and it's just not really, really worth it. So they use pictures. So they put a picture up of a horse with a rider on it, and my daughter said jockey, and the doctor said, well, most kids say horse, but okay, I guess it's a jockey. You know? So she tipped her hand as to what was on the TV in our she showed her hand to what was on the TV in our house during those days. So that was
fantastic. I love it.
That's an awful lot of excitement.
No, it is. And, you know, things aren't really slowing down either. Real quick, I'll tell you, I mean, Hawthorne, I'm going to be the weekend of April 7th, going to be up at Hawthorne. We're going to have a handicapping challenge up there. It's actually going to be broadcast on NBC Sports Chicago. Jim Miller and I will be hosting that. It'll be awesome. We'll be doing interviews with the players. And then also we've got the Express Bet Racing Report coming back up. So the pedigree information on these Derby contenders, starting with, I believe, on March 24th, we're going to start doing that show again. And, of course, we've got EquestriCon coming up in conjunction with Breeders' Cup later this year. So
that's fun. Well, you and I met at EquestriCon. I was lucky enough to be on the panel that Matt, your husband,
you were
Matt.
Great.
Thank you. unsolicited comment, but I'll take it. As my grandmother used to say, "Oh, go on," and then she's my grandmother used to say, "Oh, go on," and then she said, "No, I mean it. Go on." You know, that's so, well, thank you for the compliment. What do you see this year? And do you think this is the year where we finally see someone who hasn't raced as a 2-year-old step up and take one of the Triple Crown, take the Derby?
You know, I don't think so. I mean, it's possible. Nothing is beyond the realm of possibility with horse racing. There's been a lot of hype about him. Obviously, those fractions he rattled off were uber impressive. And he looks so easy doing it, too. This horse has got a really nice his hindquarters are super efficient. This horse can really get them underneath himself and push himself forward with minimal effort. And so it was really intriguing to see him run. I will say a horse I am actually pretty excited about, and so maybe, you know, it could be an exception, is this Telekinesis. I thought he was very impressive in breaking his maiden over at the fairgrounds, and his pedigree is stellar, and he's got a nice Derby build to him. But I will also say, going back to last year, you know, the horses that debuted and were, you know, in the juvenile and whatnot, Volta Oro, I don't think you should count this horse out. He's a very, very nice horse. He's got that build for a mile and a quarter. He's got the pedigree for a mile and a quarter. If I had anything to knock him on, I think he has excuse for the juvenile. If I had anything to knock him on confirmation-wise, he might be slightly upright in the front pasture. But other than that, he's just, I think, a really beautiful horse, and the type of horse that, looks the type. And then you also had Audible, but Audible, I'm a little concerned about that horse's pedigree for a mile and a quarter, because I believe he's by Into Mischief, and then he's out of he's got more speed on the bottom side, and the mare being by Gilded Time, so there could be an issue there. But
Have the Into Mischief surprised you at all?
No, actually, I was really keen on them. I've been keen on them for a while. What I will say is interesting is that, you know, it wasn't like it was his first crop that was just coming out. It took a few crops. But I've always been keen on them, especially with Into Mischief's connection to just such a classy family with the relationship to Beholder. I think it was just a matter of time. And I was really keen on them. I remember having a conversation months ago, during Saratoga, about just how well they've really, you know, how much they've come into their own, these horses. So it's been interesting. I don't know if they kind of just changed the book of mares he was getting or what, but
right,
they've been firing.
For sure.
Who is it who has surprised you as a sire or not surprised you? Who do you think is there? I don't want to put you on the spot. I don't mean to do that. I don't mean to do that. But who is the sire that is kind of underrated right now, or who's about to burst on the scene to you see confirmation wise?
Oh boy, you know, I'm trying to rack my brain right now and just running it through my head. I don't think there's anybody who's just been like a super surprise. I will say originally, like, I wasn't anticipating for last year. I mean, maybe this is because I was so focused on the Shackelfords coming out, because I had one of my own, that I wasn't prepared for how well Dialed In did.
Dialed In is by Darby Dan.
Yeah, both of them. Yeah,
it stands at Darby Dan Farm, right?
Yeah, both being at Darby Dan. But, boy, I'll tell you, I was thrilled for Darby Dan, because I have friends there, and to see those horses come out firing the way they were, I mean, it was really, you know, I don't want to say surprising, but, I mean, I just wasn't anticipating it, is all I mean to say. But he's just a cool horse, Dialed In himself. I've seen him in person a couple times now, and he's you know, a horse that really was just, the progeny was, again, firing away at a rate that I was not prepared for, because I was so focused on Shackelford, you know, as far as the Derby didn't get. But, I mean, as far as new sires, you know, I haven't – obviously, it's kind of hard. I'm waiting until I see some more of, you know, what's happening at the 2-year-old sales and whatnot, get a feel for how they're doing. But I do know that Windstar, obviously, they're really keen on their Carpe Diems. I don't know if they I got to look into that a little bit more. I think I've seen some nice foals from them. But I will tell you, the American Pharoah foals that I've seen hitting, you know, conformation-wise and just body-wise, they are really solid-looking athletes. So.
Okay. Well, I guess that's going to be for out of the last, I guess you can throw Gunrunner in there. Bob is a big believer in Gunrunner. But at least prior to Gunrunner, you know, the big three in recently has been, of course, American Pharoah, California Chrome, and Arrogate. And they come from different backgrounds. And, Ren, I know you know this. Bob, you know this. But for our listeners who may not, you know, California Chrome is not bred at all and you know, perform way outperformed his pedigree on the track. Arrogate is beautifully bred, and American Pharoah, of course, is beautifully bred. So it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. I mean, I think they've done their best job with California Chrome by getting him in the place where they can get good mares to him, you know. But I guess that was always a worry. Do you think California Chrome is a nick that won't pass on his talent, or do you think it's just some hidden talent there?
I think he's got it. I think he actually has a shot, and I actually think he has better pedigree than people give him credit for. You know, one of the things that is really interesting about California Chrome, and I love the connection with him being at TaylorMade, is that his sire, Lucky Pulpit, is from the same female family as Unbridled Song. And so I always thought that was a nice tie-in. But not only that, but the horse has got a nice and this is one of the things the tailors always like to stress, and it is important. The thing with California Chrome also is that he is inbred to one of the nicest blue hen mares, numbered account through his dam. And so I really think, given the right combination, I mean, this horse could definitely pass on his talent. It's just a matter of finding, you know, the right crosses and the right mares conformationally that will flatter him. So I give him a shot for sure. I'll tell you, one of the horses I am very excited about to see going forward is I want to see how Frosted does as a sire. You know, there's that whole idea that milers make the best sires. So, and as somebody who's a big fan of that horse, it's kind of cool now to, you know, see the progeny. And
excuse me, I'm sorry.
You're fine.
No, we said that one time on the show that milers make the best sires, and I was surprised by the vociferousness of people disagreeing with that. I mean, you know, the miler
really
has always been the nice mix of blazing speed and staying power. You know, but I guess I guess, you know, people kind of corrected me on that, and I think Frosted is, you know, tremendously. He's well bred himself, and there'd be no surprise at all if he became a big sire. But his Met Mile, I think, was one of the more impressive races you could ever see. Certainly in person, it was one of the more impressive races I've ever seen.
And I've had the, you know, great pleasure of seeing this horse in person a few times, and he's beautiful. I mean, for everything he did on the track, he's got the looks to match, and it's not just because he's gray. He's just a really beautifully put together horse. You know, it's kind of interesting, and I mean, this is another, like, again, because I'm a geek when it comes to this pedigree stuff, I thought it was kind of interesting that Solomini, who's on the Derby Trail, he's a son of Curlin, but beyond that, his dam is a half sister to Midshipman. But not only is she a half sister to Midshipman, she is also a half sister to Fast Cookie, and Fast Cookie is the dam of Frosted. So that's pretty interesting, I think, that he's got that pedigree in there. That's definitely a little horse that tries, I'll tell you. He lays it out there every time. You might not get there, but he's a very talented horse. See that, you know, in pedigree.
We can go back and really, you know, Frosted was who beat American Pharoah and the Travers, not necessarily Keen Ice.
Yeah.
You know, Frosted.
Yeah, right,
Frosted
exactly,
wore him out.
The bumping. Oh, that was one of those races you're like, oh, gosh, come on, let's just get it clean here, guys. Yeah. Yeah, that was, you know, Faro to me is still the most efficient mover I have seen in years. I mean, my gosh, I'm not going to fault anybody for deciding to retire to stud. I always am a proponent of the, you know, so long as the horse is sound and happy, if the owners want to keep racing them, great. If the owners want to retire them, it's their prerogative. But I'll tell you, I really do wonder what that horse would have done it for. I think he would have only gotten better.
I tend to agree. I mean, Bob, we've spoken about this on the show, right? I mean, he had an opportunity of going down as the greatest of all time, and while he is great, and, you know, he accomplished things on the track that no one had in you know, 30 years. It's still the memory fades a little bit because he didn't cap it off with that 4-year-old year that would have been the icing on the cake.
I think a lot of people felt it was a show of great sportsmanship that Bob Baffert brought him to Saratoga. And in fact, I think that night he and his wife were out to dinner somewhere in Saratoga. The entire restaurant got up and gave him a standing ovation for the horse in defeat. So he loses up there and he comes back. He wins by the length of the stretch in the Breeders' Cup. How can you argue with the success that horse enjoyed? You know, who beat American Fat? He did not win his opening maiden race at Delmar.
Oh gosh, I can't remember.
Was it Accelerate? Is that it's the horse who beat him twice, right? Is Accelerate the horse on the West Coast who beat him?
Was it Ohm?
Do they have that? No, it wasn't Ohm. Maybe it was.
I can't remember, you guys.
Yeah. No, not important. Not important question. But listen, clearly, we've been very fortunate the last couple of years. You look at the pantheon of Gunrunner to Arrogate to American Pharaoh. You know, you can go. It used to be you can go 10, 20 years before you saw a horse that talented. And we saw three in a row. We saw three in a row like that.
And you throw in the fillies in the last 10 years with Zenyatta and Rachel Alexandra and the grass horse and Wise Dan. I mean, we really have seen a tremendous amount of super talented horses. And I think in large part, what has solidified this game, and I wrote an article on this once. I'll send it around again. Was television? You know, when TVG finally came about. And allowed racing fans to see what was going on all across the country rather easily. It made this debate possible. I mean, I remember watching horses when we were younger, and people would come back with stories of horses who were great from somewhere far away. But you really took it with a grain of salt because you didn't see it. You only heard about it, you know. And if you're not on TV, at times you're not important. And you know, it's great now to have a debate about almost anything. And on this show, we welcome any debate because it's good to have people talking about horses rather than not. I mean, that's
absolutely.
You know, for the good of the game. You know, I remember another article I wrote where when the first time Spectacular Bid came to run in New York, and I was working as a mutual clerk, and we were all excited by. A horse who was, the name escapes me now, but the Firestones had, who was the son of Secretariat, who won so easily up in Saratoga. And when someone came up and bet $20,000 on Spectacular Bid before the race, and I was the mutual clerk, I thought he'd asked the wrong ticket. I couldn't believe it wasn't on the son of Secretariat they were betting.
Oh, General Assembly, Bill.
General Assembly. I was going to say January Wood. General Assembly. And he looked at me and I said, "Are you sure you want this number?" And he said, "This is the fastest horse you've ever seen." And you know, we were jaded about it because there was no real replays back at the time. And I remember telling people that I had taken this bet, and you know, get ready when the odds board shows, it's going to show that this horse from Maryland was the favorite, not General Assembly. And people kind of looked at me and said, we've heard of fastest horses from other places before. You know, we take it with a grain of salt.
Uh-huh.
And that's not the case now. Now, you know, on a weekend, because of TVG, you can see races from everywhere. And because of replays, you can see everything if you miss it. So it's really opened the game up tremendously.
Oh, yeah. Especially for the replays are beyond, I mean, they're invaluable. to the player. Because you can't always, I mean, again, not knocking the people who write the chart notes, but they're not always accurate.
Yeah, they can't be.
Accurate.
Right.
Right. You can't see every, I mean, you've got how many races a day, you're looking for every, you know, how many horses in a day, you might miss something. But yeah, I mean, the replays are invaluable. And yeah, it's great to have a debate, but I mean, I think a lot of things when we talk about the greats, it's very subjective too, because I think, you know, sometimes it's even more about how many races or at what level a horse has won. It's also the way in which they did it and how they, you know, maybe personally touched you. Made you feel. I mean, I wasn't taken alive for Secretariat, but he's my all-time favorite horse.
Now you're just showing off, Ren.
No, you know what? I'll be 39. I'm going to be 39. So, you know.
So you don't start living until you're in your 50s.
That's funny. Hey, 50's a new 30.
That's right. Well, you know, somebody up in Saratoga, one of our friends turned, I guess, 50 a couple of years ago, and someone said 50 is the new 30, and some guy standing next to us we didn't know said, yeah, 57 must be the old 80 because I feel terrible. It depends on who you are. Our good friend Pat Cannon texted me during the show here that Ohm, in fact, did beat American Pharoah in his maiden race.
All right.
So thank you. Thank you, Pat, for that. And Pat Cannon deserves congratulations. His trotters have won 3 races in the last month up in Saratoga Harness, including one today.
Congratulations.
So continues to excel at that game and just does a tremendous job with runs a lot of work for a bunch of partners that he does, you know, for the fun of the game. And congratulations. That's excellent. I guess when you talk about debating the greats, and we don't want to keep you too long, but you say
the
difference of opinion is great, is good. I became convinced at the panel that we spoke at EquestriCon, where Matt was the moderator, by the vociferousness of one of the people in the audience there just extolling the virtues of Dr. Fager as by far the greatest racehorse that could ever have been. And I don't know if I 100% bought everything he was saying, but there was no doubting his sincerity, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the doctor. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
He was really, you know, there comes a time where you just accept people's.
And that's the thing. Gosh, I do remember that. I remember that very vividly now, actually. But yeah, and
yeah,
but that's
Bob,
the thing. I mean, these horses can impassion you. Yeah. but I mean, that's the thing, though. I mean, these horses, I mean, when they, you know, somebody might, like, love Damascus, right? So it's like, thankfully nobody tried to argue with him. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, these horses, you know, and the names live on, and they touch you, and they mean something to you, and a lot of times it's for different reasons. And I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's not the same for you, but I know when I watch Secretariat Belmont, and I'm watching this horse pull away, and I hear that he's moving like a tremendous machine as he's going by the American flag flapping in the air. I'm getting chills watching this horse just, you know, opened up. And when you see something, it's like, well, gosh, if a horse can achieve such greatness, if he can be gifted with such ability, what can I as a human being do? And so, you know, and I mean, gosh, a horse like John Henry, that's Matt's all-time favorite horse. You know, these are the things that I think make horse racing beyond what you can do paramutually, you know, what keeps you coming back. And so long as the debate's going, I say good, because that means people are interested.
That's right. Well, they can't disappoint you by saying something that you disagree with, which is always good.
No.
Every one of your idols can disappoint you at some point in your life by doing or saying something that disappoints you, and the horses never do. Well, that's tremendous.
No, they have no ego.
We have a caller here. I don't know if this person is looking to speak with you. I don't know if this person is just listening to it on the phone. Would you mind if I patch that person in if it was someone who wanted to say hello?
You are more than welcome.
Okay, let's do that. Welcome to Racetrackers.
Hey, Bill. Hey, Ren. First of all, this is
Jay
calling. Congratulations, Ren, okay?
Hey, Jay. Yes. Hi. Thank you so much. How are you doing?
pretty good. It's great news here. It's great news here. All that stuff, and like wishing you, Matt, all the best.
That's so nice. Thank you so much.
Love that guy. Matt's a cool guy. People don't really, you don't really get to see him off TV, but Matt is a really cool guy.
Yeah, yes, he is. I would have to concur with that. Not quite
yeah,
as cool
he
as
is.
Me, but he's pretty cool.
Jay, we missed you 1 week. We need to apologize to you. You 1 week you called, and I was trying desperately to get you on, and for some reason, I don't know, I think we had too many people on the line. I couldn't get you on. I knew you were holding, but I knew it was you, but I tried to get you, so apologies there.
No worries. So you guys getting ready for the Triple Crown Trail?
Yeah.
It's a pretty exciting time this year. You know,
Who's your horse so far, Jay?
Well, you know, I think that a lot of people have not talked about him, but you mentioned him. I think he's the best backward horse, but once he puts it together, is I like that Tolomei. I think once he figures it out, I think he's really
the best backward.
I think he's the best backward contingent. You know, I don't know if he's going to – hopefully he'll get to run in one of the legs or the – or at least two of the legs. But I think he's actually one of the backward horses. I mean, I can't wait to see Bolt, you know, because, like, I'll put the Breeders' Cup aside for his he was wide. So, but I just want to see what he does in that Tampa Leap. And so I was impressed with I want to see what he has to offer. The State Classic was tough. You couldn't get no feeling, but like that Sinclair horse, I mean, for Bloom Racing, I mean, it would be nice for Jeff Bloom for them to get that horse to the Derby. I mean, he ran some very good numbers, you know, like his last two races were stellar, you know. So
yeah,
I mean you want a story like that, you know. Just get to captivate, you know, racing. You always need a story like that, you know, following. Yeah, I mean, it's still early, but Avery Island, I think I like Avery. I thought Avery Island was impressive. I thought his races were nice on the East Coast. I thought Avery Island looked very good.
Now, Jay, we spoke about it a little earlier on the show. Bob and I were talking about it seems like Avery Island's going to go to Louisiana for the Louisiana Derby, and Kieran's going to run in Teist in New York. That makes me think that Kieran may be more high on Enticed, even though he didn't run as well down in Gulfstream. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, with Avery Island, you know, Joe's been riding down there for Mike Stedham. You know, he's Stedham's first call rider down there. So, and I think the stretch down at the Fairgrounds, you know, I think it's a good choice for Avery Island. I guess maybe they saw that the Gulfstream didn't suit Entice, so I think that's where they decided to go. And I guess they probably figured they want to give Entice maybe a little bit more time, you know, after that race. So I mean, there's nothing in New York, I think, right now, although it's early, that really would scare Entice away, you know, from not showing up over there. So I think it's a good choice, sending Avery Island down to the Fairgrounds. I mean, usually the local horses has been dominating that trail. So let's see, like, hopefully he could win, you know, that race and move on to the first Saturday in May.
Excellent. Well, Jay, you've seen Jay at various venues.
Oh yeah, Jay's at all the big dances.
I was gonna say, you're there. Well, it's funny you say dance because Jay is one of the greatest dancers I've ever seen, as far as actually dancing and carrying on.
Thanks, Bill.
But Jay, where are you going? Which of the Derby preps are you planning on attending this year?
I went to Gulfstream. I went to go see the farewell for Gunrunner because this is what I'm a big fan of. So I probably will. I'm tossing up. Maybe I might try to go back to Keeneland. You know, I might try to go to the bluegrass. I think that's okay. Where.
I think we're going to be there April 12th to the 15th. And we're talking Bob into coming with us, and that's not the bluegrass. It's a little later. The last couple of years we went to bluegrass and we get caught in bad weather. But for this year, our group is going on the 12th to the 15th, which I don't really know what that is. I don't know if it's what the stakes race that weekend is, but that'll be fun for us. That's a beautiful place, Bob. We got to get you over there. You got to work that out.
Yeah, I'm going to try to.
Guys can't go wrong.
I put you on the spot on the radio. I didn't mean to do that. Well, Ren, you know, we don't want to keep you. We've had you for an hour. We can stay forever, as far as we're concerned. But we know your time is valuable, and you know everybody has things to do. We hope you'll come back to the show anytime, and Matt's welcome.
Oh,
and,
gosh, I'd love it.
And you know, we have each Thursday night here. We have. You know, what we feel to be sophisticated racing conversation. It's not. We try to stay away from purely handicapping. We try to stay away from purely, from gossip or controversy. Yeah, and it's we have a nice loyal group of listeners and guests like you make it possible. So we certainly want to thank you for
coming on.
The replay will be up. At all times, the glory of the internet. The internet, the replay is up, and feel free to use it any way you'd like. And
awesome.
You know, again, which we're just proud to have you on.
What a great guest.
Oh, that's very sweet. I just think it's a lot of fun. Come on, talk about my favorite subject. Get to impart some of the angles I employ, some of the horses I love. And yeah, I mean, it's going to be an exciting time, guys. You've got some great races coming up. And like I said, it'll be interesting to see, even Jay said, I say you throw out that juvenile with Bolt D'Oro. I think he's going to be interesting going forward. McKenzie's a very nice horse, obviously, for Baffert. You can't go wrong with your juvenile champion. He's a very nice mover himself. I think we've got an interesting group going forward. And like you said, if there is a horse that hasn't made his debut till this year that could possibly, hit the Derby and make some noise, I think it's Telekinesis. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. But, no, guys, I've had a lot of fun speaking with you. And I hope that we can have a chat again. Maybe when we get closer to Saratoga, maybe I'll have some picks for you.
Delighted to have you back anytime, and spread the word of how much fun we have here each Thursday, and again
absolutely.
We thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right,
you
have a great night, guys.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
All right, number of topics there. Great, and we thank all the listeners who send me texts during it, because it's good. It helps me stay focused, and someone else can look things up for me when we don't have it right. So that's great. Thanks, everyone. Jay, we're talking about this week's race, and we'll go back to it, and then we'll wrap up. I guess the Hal's Hope is the only race of real note this week. Do you have any idea what happened to Send It In? Why he was been away from the races for so long?
No. He must have had some sort of setback or something, because it seems like Matt seems like he gives the horses time off. So I'm just wondering, maybe that last race when he ran, he might either, he probably wasn't training well. Because it seems like Todd sometimes tends to, when they're not training well, he tends to give them some time off.
I guess he did the same thing the year before, Bob, right? I guess he was off from March till December and then came back like gangbusters. Maybe
correct.
He's just a horse who can't take training for very long. I mean, he's a gelding. He's only 6 years old. So Jay is right. There's all the reason in the world to protect him. You have years ahead of you if you manage to handle it correctly.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what because Fletcher does that a lot with some of the horses. Some of them they have injuries, but of course I want to see what Tacklight does. And also, Always Dreaming is coming back. He's been on the work tab, so That should be really interesting. Like, I think that, well, earlier on they said their goal was the Met Mile, but I'm sure somewhere down the line they'll probably, you know, stretch them out.
It'll be interesting. Right, well, maybe we'll give Terry Finley a call and see if he has any update for us on Always Dreaming, last year's Derby winner. I mean, I guess the last time we saw him, he had become anxious going to the gate in the last couple of races and ran poorly. And I don't know whether it was he needed a mental break more than a physical break, but it'll be interesting to see where they come back or how far they get with him.
Yeah, Bill, it'll be very interesting to see, because, like, right now, of course, like, you know, I mean, I would have to say, I think in the older division right now, West Coast is looks like the top horse. But, you know, you still have some other horses out there, like Always Dreaming was coming back, Taffrit, and Irish War Cry makes his season debut back. You know, so like hopefully, you know, like we could get a good run of nice, solid horses to, you know, carry the past couple of good years of racing for the older division that we have had. You know, so, I mean, that was a big loss with Gunrunner, you know, so, but it was time, you know. But
I guess we had him one more race than we otherwise would have. And, you know, Bob, I'm still trying to flesh out my thoughts on where the Pegasus World Cup falls, whether it falls
yeah.
in the previous year or the beginning of the next year. I mean, I know on the calendar it's in 2018, but it's both years now. It seems like it's wrapped up the year before, hasn't it?
No, Bill, I can understand that sentiment. It's before the three-year-olds have really taken off and started to make headway into their careers and years. So it does seem like it's almost like an extension or the final collection of the really nice horses from the previous year running for that big pot to kind of confirm. It's almost like a confirmation race.
Right.
Will the horse from 17 stand up for this one final test?
And I guess at some point maybe the racing world will come to the thought that it's, you know, just how corporations don't operate on a calendar year, they operate on a fiscal year. You know, maybe the racing season will actually end with the Pegasus World Cup as opposed to with the Breeders' Cup Classic. Although that's heresy to the Breeders' Cup people, I'm sure.
Right. But listen, as we said a couple of weeks ago, I think anything that gets good horses together and shines a spotlight on the sport that we really enjoy, it's a good thing. You're right, though. It kind of just falls at an awkward time in the year. It's in that January period where you're exiting 17, but you really haven't started off establishing the stars of 18 yet.
Well,
I mean, I'm sorry, Jay, go ahead.
Well, I think what happened is, like, I guess really is, like, usually the Breeders' Cup is always that farewell. But, like, I guess, like, for the older horses, the ones that probably will come back, there might be some that don't come back. That's like a farewell, probably, type of send-off. And then, because then it's really all about the Derby Trail, you know? Yeah, there are some other races, but the other races are down the line for the older horses. So, like, the older horses don't get the spotlight no more. It just becomes the focus of the upcoming three-year-olds.
Right. So, I mean, they may, you know, it may be more accurate maybe to steal a page out of the Super Bowls book, which doesn't necessarily speak of Super Bowls by years, but speaks of what number it is, you know, Super Bowl 52 or 53. You know, maybe this will be Pegasus World Cup 2 and Pegasus World Cup 3, and, you know, you kind of decide in your own mind whether you found it to be the start of one year or the wrap-up of the previous one. But, Maybe that's a way to go. Bob, do you have a selection for the House Hope or anything else on the card? Again, it's a tough week to handicap, and maybe this week we just watch NCAA basketball for interest.
Bill, I am. There are two horses I do like in the race. I am going to play Malagasy to win, and play who is the sixth horse in the race, and also play it in exactas with the Inform Conquest Big E. So
okay.
3663 exacta, and the sixth horse, one off the layoff for Todd Pletcher, Malagasy, to win the race. You know, Bill, the only other horse that kind of caught my eye on the Gulfstream card, going back to the maiden race, the 10th race, where you highlighted, you know, very appropriately, King Zachary. I'm going to look to the very outside in that field because, again, given the one-turn sprint, I prefer to be on the outside. And I'm going to take a look at Kelly Breen's horse, Ark in the Dark, by Midnight Loot,
okay,
out of a AP ending mare, who's working well, trained by Kelly Breen, Nick Juarez in the saddle, maybe get a little bit of a price, first-time Lasix. The Midnight Loot's fit at this distance, so maybe this is one I might try to play, almost primarily because I like the post. And I'll watch the action
well, I mean,
as well. So
you look at that horse's work tab, and again, for listeners who may not follow, you know, workouts so closely, what you want to see is evenly spaced workouts about a week apart with no gaps. And,
right.
And boy, you have that in spades with Ark in the Dark, who's the 13th horse in the 10th race at Gulfstream on Saturday. You know, from November 22nd, he works every 7 or 8 days, you know, right up until now. So, you know, on the form, you see 12 workouts, three of which are bullets, all down at Palm Meadows. Yeah, that horse certainly could be ready first asking. There's no question about that.
And again, you might get a little bit of a price there. So, if my play Saturday will be the 13 Ark in the Dark in the 10th. And Malagasy in the feature and backing up at exactly what Conquest Big E.
Excellent. Both at Gulfstream. Jay, any handicapping nuggets for us?
Well, I think that's probably the best race of the week, the Malagasy race. And I would go the same route that he said, 6-3. I mean, that Conquest Big E, he ran a very last two nice solid races, and he just kept on grinding. So, I think that is the best play of the week, really. I mean, I think that should be a decent exactor, you know. I mean, Malagasy, they have both early. The more line is 4-1, and Big Conquest Big E is 8-1. I mean,
The two horses who'll be short prices, Irish War Cry and Economic Model, are both stuck down on the inside, which at a mile at Gulfstream can be difficult, and they're both coming back off of layoffs, and they both probably have bigger ambitions going forward this year. So you may go with the horses who are actually in form, who have recent races, and that's the two that you guys highlighted. That's a good theory.
I think there's there's like two states of Santa Anita. Santa Anita's got a little, not a bad card. I think it's the Wishing Well, and there's another race. Can't think about it, but there's two nice races at Santa Anita. So I mean, that's not a bad option to take a look at if anybody's looking to play Santa Anita. Got two nice little decent stake races. But I don't know, one of them is Wishing Well.
Go later in the day, right? Give yourself the day off and start playing later in the afternoon. Well,
yeah.
Guys, I think this is great. I don't know if there's anything we left out. We have a few minutes left, but I think maybe we've covered a lot of ground here. I thought Ren Carruthers was a great guest, and the passion for pedigree is obvious, right?
I'd agree with you on that. Definitely.
Well, And there's no question that
and she's a lovely person too, boy. She was so patient and enthusiastic and friendly. So she was a terrific guest.
Yeah, no, and Matt, when Matt was the master of ceremonies on that panel I was on, he was great too. And Ren stood in the back and didn't videotape it, but I think put it live on Twitter or live on Facebook. And I think the thing lasted 90 minutes. I don't think she put her arm down the entire time, videotaping it. It was she should have got combat pay for that afternoon. But I thought she'd be an interesting guest, and I'm delighted that we had her on. And we missed Mike tonight, but we'll get Mike back on the show next week. Again, congratulations to Pat Cannon for winning all those races up at Saratoga Harness. Keep up the good work. That's tremendous. And thanks to Bob Gusty for giving us his opinion on Craig Perrett. So if there's not anything we forgot, maybe we'll play this song and be ready for next week.
Very good, Bill.
That was a pleasure talking to you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Jay Dolaskar and Bob Santame. Thanks, everybody. Let's get together again next week.
Sure.